Yeah, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. European interior ministers failed Monday to agree on a plan to relocate 120,000 migrants across the European Union. Most of the ministers support the plan for binding quotas, but the Eastern European countries, including Hungary, raised objections. The ministers did agree on an earlier plan to relocate 40,000 migrants now in Greece and Italy. Swedish Justice and Migration Minister Morgan Johansson said he hopes Europe can do more than that.
I hope that the European Union can commit itself to redistribute 120,000 refugees from Italy, Greece and Hungary. Another 120 above of the top of those 40,000 that we agreed on this summer.
Earlier Monday, Hungary blocked its main crossing point along the border with Serbia with razor wire. The Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban said new laws restricting immigration called for severe punishments for human traffickers. Egyptian officials say a group of tourists was in a restricted area when security forces opened fire on Sunday, mistaking the group for suspected terrorists and killing at least 12 people, including two Mexican citizens. Egypt's Ministry of Foreign Affairs said that military and police forces were targeting terrorists utilizing 4x4 vehicles similar to the ones used by the tourists when they fired on the visitors. Mexico's president is demanding a thorough investigation. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu called emergency talks with his ministers Monday to discuss the surge in violence between Israelis and Palestinians in Jerusalem. A Jewish man died early Monday when his car crashed into a ditch after it was struck by a Palestinian rock thrower. Two others in the car hurt. Also Monday, Palestinian protesters and police fought for the second straight day outside a religious site in East Jerusalem, revered by both Muslims and Jews. This is VOA News. A 16-year-old girl has died of Ebola in northern districts of Sierra Leone. The death is seen as a setback for Sierra Leone, which just last month celebrated the discharge of its last Ebola patient. The country had gone for 6 months without a new case of the disease. Reuters reports officials quarantined hundreds of people Monday in hopes of stemming the spread of Ebola. The U.S. Defense Department has confirmed reports that Russia appears to be setting up an airbase in Syria. A Pentagon spokesman says the movement of Russian personnel and equipment into an area near the coastal city of Latakia suggests the establishment of a forward operating base. Meanwhile, Syria's ambassador to Russia calling talk of Russia troop presence in Syria a lie. Russia has only admitted to supplying arms to Syria and helping to train personnel on use of the weapons. The Australian Prime Minister Tony Abbott has been ousted from office in a leadership challenge. Mr. Abbott was replaced as the leader of the Liberal Party by his rival, Malcolm Turnbull, who will become the head of government.
It will be a thoroughly Liberal government committed to freedom, the individual, and the market. It will be focused on ensuring that in the years ahead, as the world becomes more and more competitive, and greater opportunities arise, we are able to take advantage of that.
Turnbull's support for a carbon trading plan and gay marriage in the Australian Republic made him unpopular with this party's right wing. A U.S. courthouse clerk who was jailed for refusing to issue same-sex marriage licenses is back at work, promising not to block her deputy from issuing those licenses. Hours after Kim Davis showed up at the Rowan County Courthouse in Kentucky, a deputy issued a license to a same-sex couple, and Davis did not interfere. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled in June that same-sex couples have a constitutional right to marry. And Taliban insurgents have stormed a prison in central Afghanistan, freeing hundreds of inmates. Ayaz Ghul has the story.
Afghan officials say the well-organized pre-dawn assault began with a suicide car bombing at the entrance that allowed other insurgents to get into the prison in the province of Ghazni. An Interior Ministry spokesman, Najib Danish, told VOA the facility was housing around 436 men and women prisoners. He says 355 of them escaped, including a female detainee, and a search is underway to recapture them. Afghan authorities have described almost half of those who fled as dangerous criminals, saying they were charged with national security crimes. Ayaz Gulf, Islamabad.
I'm Michael Brown reporting in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa. From the Voices of America, I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, September 15th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone announces yet another Ebola death.
I know that Ebola continues to frustrate our efforts, but what I know is that the infrastructure for success is now available with the Ebola response team in Sierra Leone.
Stephen Gaugia is Sierra Leone's National Ebola Response Coordinator. Demolitions in Sierra Leone's capital stir controversy and concern. South Sudan's army accused rebels of launching new attacks, even as the two sides meet to discuss how best to implement the latest peace deal. And Nigeria's president has met with President Hollande of France.
Hollande told reporters the fight against Boko Haram is also the fight against Islamic State, because Boko Haram receives support from IS or Daesh, and it's impossible to distinguish terrorism among regions today.
VAS correspondent Lisa Bryant in Paris. A trust is being launched today to support the family of abducted Zimbabwe activist Itai Zamora. And the United Nations says urgent action is needed to save millions of women and children. Those stories plus Marco Uman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A Sierra Leone health official says resumption of a 42-day countdown toward being declared Ebola-free has been put on hold, at least for now, as the country tries to contain the latest outbreak of the virus. National Ebola Response Coordinator Stephen Gaugia says the countdown will resume once the chain of transmission has been broken. This came as Sierra Leone Monday announced a new Ebola death in the northern Bombale district that had gone nearly 6 months without reporting an infection. Gaugia says the latest fatality is a 16-year-old girl, and officials are investigating the origin of her infection.
What we know so far based on the investigations is that Sunday we received news from our lab out in the Makeni area stating that a patient that had come in on the 8th, basically, who was symptomatic, was taken into the ETC for our treatment, and a sample was taken from the patient, a 16-year-old female. Basically, while we're awaiting the result of that sample, the patient died. And as we speak, basically, yesterday, we convened an emergency meeting, as usual, of all the responders, and the investigation has been ongoing. And by tomorrow, we are going to have a very comprehensive report on what had transpired exactly in Bombale district. Let us understand that Bombale had actually gone about 170 days without an Ebola case.
Makeni is not Cambia. We've been talking about Cambia for the past 2 weeks or so. So if this turns out to be true, an Ebola case in Makeni, what does that mean for the Sierra Leone government in terms of its effort to contain the virus?
Well, it means quite a lot, because understand that the government has done the best under the circumstances. I know that Ebola continues to frustrate our efforts, but what I know is that the infrastructure for success is now available with the Ebola response team in Sierra Leone. We have also activated the ring vaccine, you know, which has been going on in Guinea. We did that in the Cambia area. For most of our contacts, we are able to vaccinate about 119 high-risk contacts, and we are still monitoring them. And so far, like I mentioned, only 5 additional cases have been able to come forward, and they are already responding to our treatment. And this is the same approach that we are using out in the Bombale area, in the Makeni region, and has gone about 170 days without a case.
Mr. Gaugia, you mentioned Cambia and Makeni are near the border with Guinea. And we know that in Cambia, the 67-year-old woman died there, and there's somebody also, a place has been quarantined. Is there a concern on the part of your government in terms of where these people might be getting the infection, the new infection from? A
couple of things we must take into consideration, James. You know, now we have the ability to do gene sequencing. Any idea that this is coming from across the border into Guinea is not true. Based on what we have done so far, we have realized that either we are talking about a mixed transmission chain or we are also investigating other possibilities. There are several options, but the exact kind of possibility we have not been able to pinpoint at this point. But I know that before the end of the week, we'll be able to be in a better position to know exactly where these transmissions are coming from. But the fact of the matter is, it has nothing to do with anybody coming from Guinea. And also understand that Guinea has gone today about 10 days or so without a new case. So there is no possibility out there that what this is actually coming from Guinea.
What happens now to your countdown to zero, or what, 42-day countdown? Have you started that, or has it been postponed?
Where we are now, we are not counting anything. We are trying to contain the Ebola virus in Sierra Leone. Once we break the chain of transmission, we will begin to count again. And let us understand that the Ebola response in Sierra Leone focuses a lot more on regional collaboration. Whatever is happening in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, they are all very much linked together. So the issue of counting, in as much as we want to get there as soon as possible and start doing it, our focus is to break the chain of transmission and eradicate Ebola from the sub-region. That's our focus at this point.
Stephen Gaugia is Sierra Leone's National Ebola Response Coordinator. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Authorities in Sierra Leone have demolished a wide section of the capital, leaving many homeless. The government says it had been warning the residents for years about the plan and that people were illegally occupying the area. But human rights groups are concerned. They say the demolition is leaving the most vulnerable at much greater risk in the midst of an Ebola crisis. Nina DeVries has more from Freetown.
Juliana Sese is among the thousands affected by the demolitions. She's 23 years old and an Ebola survivor. She was living in an area known as Tambakula Village, a population of about 500 people. It was a fisherman's wharf with shops that some people like Sese also use as homes. The entire area was demolished several weeks ago, and now she's staying with a friend and sleeping in a room with three other adults, two toddlers, and two babies. This is not how she pictured her life after recovering from the deadly disease that's killed more than 11,000 people across West Africa.
I'm feeling scared. As for the demolished place, I just said to myself, I just feel like killing myself because I don't have where to start.
Sese says no one has offered her any help or compensation for the destruction of her home. She worries how she'll get by. Aside from several communities destroyed, an entire side of the main beach road in Freetown was also brought to the ground where restaurants and bars once stood. The government says it needed to clean up the area and make it more appealing to tourists. Deputy government spokesperson Ajibu Jallo says this has been the plan for years.
The last 3 years. There have been a series of meetings where they've told the chiefs, they've told the local chiefs around there that these people don't belong here.
Rights groups have raised concern about how the government is handling the situation. Solomon Sogbandi is the director for Amnesty International in Sierra Leone. He says the government has good intentions, but...
Why not look at an alternative sort of housing for these people? Relocate them somewhere, you know, because the fact of the matter, if you just evict them forcefully, it has a lot of other... human rights implications.
And health implications. Sogbandi says it's still rainy season and this can make people more prone to diseases like malaria if they don't have proper shelter. Jallo says some people were offered land elsewhere a couple of years ago. He says some residents did go, but then just kept coming back. But former residents say they have not been offered any help. Nina DeVries for VOA News, Freetown, Sierra Leone.
Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari met Monday in Paris with French President François Hollande. President Buhari is on a three-day visit that aims to strengthen cooperation with France, including defense and security. As Lisa Bryan reports from Paris, President Hollande has said that the fight against Boko Haram is also a fight against Islamic State.
Speaking at a joint press conference with his Nigerian counterpart, Muhammadu Buhari, President François Hollande announced a new step in France's involvement in combating the Islamic State group.
Nous sommes également présents dans la coalition en Irak.
Hollande said France is part of a coalition in Iraq against the militant group. Paris has started reconnaissance flights last week in Syria to allow it to consider whether airstrikes are necessary. And he said they are. Buhari is on a three-day visit here that aims to strengthen cooperation with France, including on defense and security issues. Nigeria and its regional allies are waging an intense battle against the Islamist militant group Boko Haram. Olan told reporters the fight against Boko Haram is also the fight against Islamic State, because Boko Haram receives support from IS or Daesh, and it's impossible to distinguish terrorism among regions today. Until now, France has only carried out airstrikes in Iraq, afraid that expanding action to Syria could strengthen the power of President Bashar al-Assad. But that has changed as Islamic State has expanded across Syrian territory. Hollande said last week the country was considering strikes. A new poll finds that 56% of French support a possible military operation against Islamic State in Syria, although most believe that military intervention cannot resolve the current crisis there. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, September 15th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Let's give a shout out to listeners on these, our VOA affiliate stations: Radio Banga FM 96.5 in Bong County, Central Liberia; Brela FM in Nigeria; Kisi FM in Tanzania; Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi; and Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 and a half minutes past the hour. South Sudan's army has accused rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar of launching new attacks against government troops positioned in Upper Nile State. This came as the two sides are meeting in Addis Ababa to discuss how best to implement the latest peace deal. John Tanza of VOA's South Sudan in Focus program has more.
SPLA military spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer says SPLA in opposition forces attacked army positions yesterday in clashes that lasted for over 5 hours.
The attack continued from 4 a.m. up to midday. It targeted the headquarters of the civil administration. Civilians were displaced, and the SPLA fought in self-defense and managed to repulse the attackers. The attack left behind it 5 SPLA soldiers were killed, and one woman was unfortunately killed by the rebels. And one of our soldiers was wounded. The commissioner of Wit County, who is a civilian, was wounded in his office.
Colonel Aguer says the government is calling on the international community to intervene to ensure that ceasefire is fully implemented.
Last week, calling upon the United Nations, United States of America, in the absence of IGAD monitoring mechanism, for the United Nations and United States of America to provide a quick provisional ceasefire monitoring system.
At the same time, SPLM in opposition deputy military spokesman Dixon Galwak accuses the government of attacking its positions in Bentiu.
So they attack us in the northern part of battleground in Unity State in a certain place called Nialdiu. Nialdiu, it is the southern part of Unity State capital Bentiu. So they attack our position, and also they attack us in the southeast in a certain area called Wit County. So they attack our position. And also today, the government also attacked our position in Waushuluk, in Upper Nile State.
Colonel Aguer says he's been informed by his commanders that the situation in Bentiu is calm. Dixon Galwak says fighting continues in Waushuluk. Galwak says they are still verifying how many rebel forces were killed in the weekend clashes across Bentiu and Waushuluk.
That was John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program reporting from our Washington studio. In Zimbabwe, a committee working with abducted activist Itai Zamora's family says it will launch today, Tuesday, the Itai Zamora Trust to help support his family and others in the same situation. Zamora has been missing for 6 months now after he was abducted from his home area on March 9th this year. Bishop Ansilimo Mangaya, chairman of the working committee, says fundraising efforts have already begun.
We have been working on this for quite a while. What we are actually going to do tomorrow is to actually launch this trust as a way of actually honoring and recognizing the work that Itai Zamora was actually doing, fighting for human rights. So we've invited various people, the embassies, civil society organizations, and individuals from different quarters of life.
What are the aims and objectives of this trust?
The aims and objectives of this trust include caring for the people who would have been left by those that would have actually been abducted, to make sure that if those that have been abducted would have been breadwinners, we want to make sure that these people will actually be assisted in terms of their livelihood. But immediately, we are very aware that Itai Zamara has a wife. Itai Zamara has two children that are going to school and they need support. Generally, also to just continually do the campaigns to make sure that human rights are observed, and we need money for that to happen. And this is one of the reasons why we would want to launch this.
So in a way, you are saying it's not only confined to the Zamara family.
Precisely the point, because you see, Itai did not just speak for himself. Itai spoke for so many people, and I'm sure that in his heart of hearts, he's very keen to make sure that those things for which he has been persecuted are actually upheld.
That was Bishop Anselimo Magaya, chairman of the Itai Zamara Trust Working Committee, speaking from Harare with reporter Jonga Kandemiri of VOA's Zimbabwe service. The United Nations is calling for urgent action to save the lives of millions of women, adolescents, and children from largely preventable causes by improving the quality of health care. The UN plans to unveil a new global strategy as part of its Sustainable Development Goals 2030 next week in New York. From Geneva, Lisa Schlein previews for VOA the main features of the strategy.
The strategy focuses on the health of adolescents aged 10 to 19. Officials say this is the time when healthy habits such as exercise, good nutrition, and no smoking are acquired and carried throughout adulthood. This also is the period when boys and especially girls can be educated about reproductive health and family planning to prevent unwanted teen pregnancies and complications that can arise. The strategy also involves an integrated approach. Flavia Bustreo, a senior official with the World Health Organization, or WHO, says healthcare does not operate in a vacuum and that other sectors, including the environment and education, can make positive contributions.
It is an approach by all governments, by all sectors in the government, to apply their resources and their interventions in order to improve the health of women, children, and adolescents.
Statistics on women's health are bad, especially in poor countries, although data show poor people in rich countries also suffer inordinately from health problems. WHO reports 800 women die every day from pregnancy-related causes, mostly during labor. It says investment in quality health care would dramatically cut these preventable deaths. WHO Reproductive Health Chief Marlene Temmerman says women often die because they live in remote rural areas and cannot get to a health facility. She says there usually are far more doctors and midwives in urban than rural areas. She tells VOA that Uganda, for example, is solving this problem by redistributing healthcare workers more equitably between the city and country.
They have successfully distributed by giving some incentives to the healthcare workers to go to the remote areas, which had an impact on the quality of care within the facilities.
Officials figure it will cost $80 billion to implement the health improvement actions called for by the global strategy over the next 15 years. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin at the All Africa Games in Brazzaville, Republic of Congo. In athletics, defending champion Tosin Oke and Olumide Olamigoke clinched a 1-2 Nigerian triumph in men's triple jump, as Tunisia's Balti Sringe and Dora Mafudi secured a 1-2 Tunisian victory in women's pole vault on Wednesday. Republic of Congo's Frank Elembe Waka set a men's shot put championship record of 20.25 meters as Burkina Faso's Kimalu Letitia Bambara improved women's championship hammer throw record to 66.91 meters. On the track, Ivory Coast's Marie-Jose Talou won women's 100 meters in a championship record of 11.02 seconds as Ben Youssef Meite triumphed in men's 100 meters in an Ivory Coast record of 10.04 seconds. South African Antonio Alcana won men's 110 meter hurdles in a lifetime best of 13.32 seconds. Ethiopians Tsebelu Zewude and Mekonnen Gebremedin clinched gold medals in men's 10,000 meters and 1,500 meters respectively, as Guliame Thierry of Mauritius won the decathlon. In women's events, Lisa Labishi of Seychelles triumphed in high jump as South African Caster Semenya won the 800 meters. Still in Brazzaville, in women's basketball, Nigeria overwhelmed Republic of Congo 102-23. Gabon outwitted Algeria 69-57. Senegal beat Ivory Coast 69-55, and Mali outplayed Cameroon 65-54. In the men's game, Angola beat Republic of Congo 81-64 as Egypt dismissed Gabon 60-34. In women's handball, Ivory Coast outplayed the Democratic Republic of Congo 29-23. Senegal and Cameroon drew 19-all. Angola dismissed Nigeria 37-25, and Republic of Congo outwitted Burkina Faso 39-18. Turning to football, hosts Senegal play South Africa in the 2015 Africa Under-23 Cup of Nations opener in Dakar on the 28th of November, the Confederation of African Football revealed in Cairo, Egypt on Monday. According to the draws, Tunisia and Zambia are also in Group A. Group B consists of Algeria, Egypt, Mali and Nigeria. The top three teams at the two-week contest advanced to the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics. Finally, Sudan's El Merreikh and El Hilal, Algeria's USM Alger and the Democratic Republic of Congo's TP Mazembe qualified for the Orange Africa Champions League semifinals over the weekend. Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel, South Africa's Orlando Pirates, Egypt's Zamalek and defending champions El Ahly are in the Orange Africa Confederations Cup semifinals. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ome in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Tuesday morning, September 15th.
In view of the unprecedented failure of electricity regulatory bodies in Nigeria, may I call on the Western world that specializes in solar energy to come and establish in Nigeria so as to alleviate the suffering masses from blackouts. I am Prince John Ishie in Bendi, Obanikun Cross-River, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Egyptian officials say a group of tourists was in a restricted area when security forces opened fire on Sunday, mistaking the group for suspected terrorists and killing at least 12 people, including two Mexican citizens. Egypt's Ministry of Foreign Affairs said Monday that military and police forces were targeting terrorists utilizing 4x4 vehicles similar to those being used by the tourists when they fired on the visitors on Sunday in Farafra, part of Egypt's western desert. Six survivors told Mexico's ambassador to Egypt that their convoy was attacked by a plane and a helicopter. That's it for this Tuesday, September 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stradek, as well as sports editor Mango Oman, along with all of our engineers, I am James Barty in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
African music hits.
Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African music mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.
Next on Straight Talk Africa.
Shaka Ssali goes one-on-one with Uganda's Minister for Foreign Affairs, Sam Kutesa, the outgoing President of the United Nations General Assembly. The 69th session ends Tuesday. Mr. Kutesa will be with us live next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on Straight Talk Africa. That's next time on VOA Africa.